On this week's episode of the Superhero Show Show, we'll find out if X-Men 97 can compare to the greatest show of all time, X-Taz, if relationships can make it through space battles on this week's Invincible, and if the best X-Men of the week was actually on Spider-Man the Animated Series. All of that and more on an all-new episode of the Superhero Show Show. What's up, nerds? Welcome to the Superhero Show Show, the only podcast that covers every live-action TV show based on a comic book, as well as some of the animated ones. My name is Cassie, and I will be your host for this episode. It's going to be a big one, because we are excited for it. The energy is a lot in the studio, mainly from my other two, so let me bring them on. First of all, there's Ryan.
Cassie, I'm downstairs at Pop Filter Studio here at the premiere of us talking about X-Men 97 with Jennifer Aniston's stand-in from the third episode of the seventh season of Friends.
Uh-huh.
She said she will not talk, and now she's left. But, like, it is palpable tonight. Things are palpable. Everything is palpable. You could just feel it in the air.
You could also hear some other things in the air. Speaking of other things, we also have Mike here.
We're back.
That's right. We are absolutely back. If you can't tell, we're excited. We will be talking about X-Men 97. Is this the best day of your guys' fucking lives?
It was a little confusing because I hadn't seen the first 96.
Oh! He's on fire!
But yeah, I cannot. I mean, even when we heard about this, we were like, April Fool's joke. Yeah, nobody loves us this much. But look what happened.
And we started to see stills. And you're like, okay, so they're really egging us on. Like, this is going to be real. They gave interviews about it. But then a week ago, the main creative force gets fired. Like, no, they're going to steal it all away from us.
And it's easy to say that we started our coverage of X-Taz in a little segment we called X-Tazmania long before this was announced. What's harder to say, but I will say it, is the popularity of our segment is what led us here today.
People went, wow, that was a Buck Wild show. Maybe the world needs it again.
They absolutely do. We are all X-Men'd out today. We have a little surprise coming up later when we talk about Spider-Man.
I wonder what it is.
Yeah.
It's just a little surprise. We're also going to be talking about Resident Alien.
Fucking X-Men show up there too.
They're in everything. You can't get rid of them. But before that, we can't wait any longer. Let's go to a main event and talk about X-Men 97. In the first two episodes of X-Men 97, the team is trying to deal with Charles's death. Scott is trying to be a leader, Jean is trying to be pregnant, and the rest of the crew is just trying to play basketball. The Friends of Humanity are stealing mutants, and Magneto is following Xavier's will by taking over the team. To prove he's good, he allows the UN to put him on trial, but that shit gets January 6. Taste buds, I ask you this. How does the show deal with balancing the need for modernity and embracing the batshit insanity of the old show?
That is such a good question. Before I talk, I will talk, and I will say...
You currently are.
That this was great.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Loved the hour we watched together in the Pop Filter Theater.
Holding hands the whole time. Wiping tears from each other's eyes.
Screaming.
There was a lot of whooping.
There was a lot of Arsenio hauling. We wiped each other's tears, but... so much greasy, buttery popcorn finger in my eye. Who was eating the popcorn? It was awesome. But about 10 minutes into this first episode, I was like, wait, why did we love X-Taz? And it's because of the Buck Wild. And they were not going to be, if they try to be terrible. So it was just never going to be there.
Yeah. The Buck is gone. The Buck stops here. And here is 20 years ago. It's... And I'm glad they didn't try. If they had tried, it would be like bad Deadpool. And it was just like fun, too adult for a cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like they kept that.
We also watched it with a 3-year-old, and she could not give a shit.
No.
Didn't know what was happening at any time.
Child, Jean is giving birth while Storm is breaking down the themes of the last two episodes. What are you doing?
It didn't have... Yeah, it was just like... They were just like, this is just going to be a good show, and we're just going to make everyone
the
badass.
Audacity.
Like, it was so good, but the whole time it was just like, it's a good show. That's what it's got going.
And I guess if, like, looking back, this is what I should have expected, because if I expected the exact same animation, that would have been a parody of the animation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If I expected the attempts at Buck Wild, like you said, Mike, like that, it would have all been satire, and it would not have worked.
No.
So... What I guess I am suggesting is that we love two things differently in different ways.
Yes.
Which is X-Taz and X-Men 97.
Yeah.
They were always going to be different because 30 years have happened and new people are writing it. And just expectations of quality are different.
I'm sorry, what of quality?
Expectations.
X-pectations?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
These pectations. And I think they know their audience. This is a quote-unquote kid show. They know it's a bunch of middle-aged fucks.
Absolutely.
I mean, for years we've been talking about that comic books are written for the people who were 12 in 92 who started reading comic books.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is just the same thing.
I kind of want to talk about the characters. Do you think... I feel like all the characters are kind of new. Like, they tried to keep them the same, but also, like, didn't stay too attached to, like, how the old ones were portrayed.
Well, I mean... First of all, it was possible, unlikely, but possible to not like Scott in the first show, and
right.
Now it's impossible. He's just the most fucking badass John Wick level.
He fucking ice skates around the room using his eye blasts. The way he pivots by shooting the ground was sick. Eyes skate.
They truly, they said, this man sucks balls in the original. We got it. When we introduce him, it has to be the coolest shit ever so people know you're supposed to like him now. And his intro, the raddest, without a doubt. But then he's still a whiny little bitch just trying to control
everything.
It's
not whiny. His father/mentor is dead and he's trying to live up to that man's dream. That's difficult for some of us, Cassie.
Okay.
And all his stupid superhero fucks just want to play b-ball and... They don't want to be X-Men no more because they can't. They're dealing with Charles's death by giving up.
Cassie, B-Ball is also team building.
Cassie hates Cyclops because she has chosen a life of being surrounded by bitches that think they're Cyclops.
Watch me ice skate back hill. Back hill? Backwards uphill.
We also have, Storm, still fucking kick ass. Also, her new look, rad as hell.
She hawked it out.
Yeah.
Mohawk with a giant rat tail. Rat tails are cool if they look like a horse's mane out of the back of your head instead of a rat tail.
You have always said that. And she's still, the one, like, thing that they're keeping from the original show is every line she delivers, she seems like she should be holding a skull.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In, like, Shakespeare clothes reading Hamlet.
And other people even comment at that.
Yeah,
that was the closest we got to like Deadpoolian.
Uh-huh.
But I felt like it worked very much in world because it was more for... It was somebody who was like, of course they would comment on like, yes, I am doing this. It's weird that Hank both in and out of world gets made fun of for how he talks.
I know.
And everybody's like, she'll fry us. We're not fucking saying shit.
Don't nobody say
Storm
anything.
Storm is badass, but like... Despite being somebody who controls the snow, she ain't got no chill, and she will just say things like, yes, a grilled cheese would satisfy my appetite tonight.
The storm is always hungry.
But again, if you look that rad, I'm not saying anything to you.
Yeah, sure, girl.
Another big change that we have in this one is Jean Grey is Preggers.
Yeah. Probably with Scott's baby.
Probably.
Do you know what just clicked as weird to me is because in the second episode, they finally have the baby. Finally, we a whole episode without her having it, and then they had it.
God, have the baby.
And we got a great like sitcom scenario of Wolverine having to deal and take her there. Loved it.
We have to get back to that,
but we will. But it we all know because it's going to be Cable that it's Nathan Summers. Do you know who is a big Nathan in their lives? Nathaniel Essex, aka Mr. Sinister.
Oh,
that's fucking crazy to name your child after the man who manipulated you your entire life.
It'd be like you naming your son McKenna.
Yes, that would be fucked up.
I am a little concerned. I'm glad the baby's born because I was so nervous that they go into battle and Jean would fucking fall over.
They updated that. She doesn't fall as much as she used to.
Was she ever in battle? She was preggers, so wasn't she just always at the mansion?
Well, she did run into the danger room when Sunspot was... Was it? No, I'm confusing things. That's Spider-Man. I'm sorry.
So much X-Men.
There was a lot of X-Men.
But yeah, the baby's born. Did it seem like a deluxe baby?
Or what?
What does that mean?
Basic cable.
This fucking guy.
He's too proud of himself.
You do that again, there's going to be a lot of strife around here.
Nice.
Oh, you fucking guys. We also have Wolverine. Wolverine. A bit of a bummer. I know he
hasn't changed at all.
I know he always has sucked, but I liked the shitty Wolverine, and this one still, I need to grow with this one.
It was always messed up to be openly into your, like, assistant manager's girlfriend. But now,
so
that,
Angela to Dwight Schrute.
Now that she is pregnant, it's weird that everybody openly talks about it.
But yeah. I'm just saying, what if that baby, would you be that surprised that baby came out?
It comes out with sideburns. Yeah. I want to poo.
That's what the baby was saying. I thought that was Wolverine's pickup line to get Jean pregnant. That didn't go in the cartoon, but in the comic books now,
they're a throuple.
So,
and it's like it's inappropriate. He always hits on her, but she definitely, when she needs something, she's just like, "Oh, Logan," and rubs his chin, even though she's pregnant with another man's baby.
Also has telepathy.
Telepathy, yeah.
Both of them, but telepathy. Could change his mind, but instead uses feminine wiles.
Because that's more fun.
Big eyes. There's a point where she, like, her bottom lip quivers, and he's just like, "I will do what you say."
And there was no, like, little zaps around her head, knew it wasn't.
No zaps.
It was real. We also have Rogue. Rogue is pretty much the same.
I would say Rogue is basically the same as a cat on a hot roof on a summer night in a sausage pan.
Yeah.
As if there was a rocking chair dipped in sugar.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have said it better myself. And then, of course,
she's still sad that she can't touch people.
Always sad.
Most
there's
people.
There's a club scene, and she just goes up to the roof.
Yeah, to watch Shadow, which is what I do.
Gambit and Rogue, they all walk in, and Gambit and Rogue are like, "Oh, we should make some time of this and have some fun." They go directly to the balcony. That's my move in a club. Yeah. Just be by myself as fast as possible.
Pretend like somebody's texting you. Do you know what's messed up? She is... Everything but her décolletage was covered, which means she's like, "Oh, somebody might accidentally touch you." Girl, that means he's being a pervert because he's touching you in your chesticles. So who cares if he falls down dead?
And she only gets his powers. He doesn't get hers. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be some roofian asshole who now can be Rogue.
Oh, gosh. No.
What a nightmare. And we did mention him. So Gambit. Gambit has a ponytail. Also rocks crop tops.
Yeah, it's so funny knowing the one thing, like, you try to avoid spoilers. The internet was mad because he was, like, flamboyant now, right? There's hints of maybe some homosexual overtones.
It was the pink
crop top. Not at all.
I was
not at all
shocked. Yeah, it's just that he looks killer in a pink crop top.
I know that he fucking rocks it.
Everybody who complains also does not have, what is the technical term, cum gutters?
Yes.
And they're jealous of his...
But he's shown them off.
Yeah.
Got to be gay to have cum gutters like that. I'm proud of my beer belly.
These are also the same kind of people like that say things like, "I bet he's so good at going down on a woman. That's
so gay." No, I always stink like shit because it's gay to wipe your own ass.
Well, it is. So. And then, surprisingly, a big part of this, we do have Morph and Bishop.
Yeah. Two not new additions, but they're like, you know who are fan favorites? Morph and Bishop. Do you know who are not going to explain why they're here now?
No.
Morph and Bishop.
No.
Even Jubilee gets, like, in the first episode, she's like, "Hey, Sunspot, here's how I joined the team." The two people, old and new viewers, might have question marks about. Nope, they're just here now.
Just accept it. Well, you guys love them. You know them.
The fact that Morph is in this show makes me know for a fact that they listen to us.
Yeah.
Like, because the writers would be like, "Who? What are we supposed to do with this guy? Like, can we cut him?" And some writer was like, "Mike likes him."
No. So
I've listened to Mike, and he's hanging on by a thread. He needs Morph in his life.
He needs this.
But you know what? Let's give him Chameleon from Spider-Man face now.
Yeah.
Insane.
Which is a comic book thing. I actually don't know when that happened.
It's, well, I think the character in the comic was Changeling, and he had that face. And then the
that's not a DC character.
That's Beast Boy. There's probably another Changeling.
Get wrecked
somewhere. Get wrecked. And then he had that face. And then it's so confusing, comics, man. At some point, they slam these two action figures together to make New Morph.
Mm-hmm. What a trend.
Who is? He's sassy. He's here. He's forgotten all about the bags under his eyes or his time as a dark mutant.
But hasn't forgotten his laugh every once in a while.
No, yeah, he's like, oh yeah.
I knew they listened to us as soon as, so Morph's obviously constantly turning into other mutants, which means he also has their power, but he does turn into the Blob at one point, and that's when I was like, fuck yeah, they get us.
It's so many wild moments. One introduction to this Morph is they're all mourning Charles's death, so who rolls in super sassy about it? Morph walking as Charles, being like, oh, do you miss me?
Is it too soon?
I can't fucking wait till your wife dies, Mike. And I'm just going to roll in in full a wig. Drag.
Oh, do you miss me? And then he turns into Psylocke in the middle of a fight and just swords now. So it's not just he gets their powers. Their whole paraphernalia
plus
shows
when
up.
He turns into Psylocke, I noticed this because of my predilections when I was a youth. When he turns into Psylocke, there's a lot of... when she fights. I wrote that down 6 times.
The way Morph acts with everybody, but especially with Wolverine, like I think he's trying to fuck. Especially there's at the end of the second episode, he's trying to cheer up Wolverine and brings him beer and chips, and Wolverine's having none of it. So he turns into Sabretooth and throws a beer at Wolverine's head. But the look on it, that now Sabretooth's face is not like, oh, we're going to fight. It's like, we're going to tussle, son.
Even the way he threw the chips is like flirty, like we're painting a house and then I paint your nose a little
bit. I think he wants to fuck everybody. Yeah. And I'm here for this new Morph.
That if I would look at Morph, I would assume that as well.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. The other big change we have in this is now that Charles is dead, he's left the X-Men to Magneto. And Magneto is trying to honor this and be a good guy.
Weird move, Charles.
Honestly.
And that's got to sting Scott a little.
It clearly does as he slowly unravels even while his son is being born. I'm just like...
It's not just that Magneto's like, hey, best friend of me died, left me this house. You guys, his dream and my will. I think Wills have a lot more power than I thought they did.
Yeah. Really, like all of his money, all of like
his beliefs are mine now, I guess. But Magneto's like, no, I want to do it. But he's doing it in such a bitch way to antagonize him the whole time. Like he can't stop. In the first episode, at least, he does mellow out a little. He's like, I guess I should actually try. In the second episode, first episode, he's just like, oh, no. Oh, what? Are you going to fight me because I've tried to kill you? Oh, no. What would Charles say about that, dicks?
Nobody has a problem with this, do they? Cyclops. Dork.
Little daddy's boy over there.
This part I did know about. Like this was like the pitch of the show is like, what's the one big thing we're going to change? And so it's not to bring Professor X back right away or at all, but to make Magneto the leader. And yeah, I think that Mike laid it out best of like, let's get crazy in the first episode and then figure out how this is going to work in episodes 2 through probably the rest of the season. There will be, it's a way to add tension. I think they're doing a good job of adding tension without being like, what the fuck? No, this is impossible.
Yeah.
It's, we have 7-8 characters who all generally big goal is the same. Protect humans, right? Reach for mutant acceptance. But all their little goals are how to get there. I think even more than the old version is different. They all have different paths. It used to always be just Cyclops versus Wolverine argue.
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, well, it's Cyclops' way. And now everybody is on a different page.
Mm-hmm. Well, something happened in between X-Men 91 through 6 and X-Men 97 where the Friends of Humanity, and we talked about this when we were like rewatching the show, the Friends of Humanity were this like insane fictional group, and in the meantime they became real.
Yes.
And so that, and like this show is very clear on its politics throughout both of these first two episodes. Not that it wasn't in the original series, but like now it's easier to believe that Magneto would understand the difference between right and wrong when wrong is them. Like it doesn't matter what your ideologies are if Nazis are here.
But what's interesting is that you would think then Magneto's old rhetoric would be stronger. Like, more X-Men would be like, Magneto was right.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he is being like, And I guess if we don't want to hand the world to the Friends of Humanity, I have to do it Charles way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not that the politics were muddy in the 90s. Maybe it is just that it makes sense. But like, I feel like the way they say bigot and hey, you Donald Trump, like things are so like, do you see what we're talking about, viewers?
Are you guys getting it now?
When they go into Guy Rich to like Hannibal Lecter him, he's like in prison. He says a line that tolerance is extinction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
that's
straight up the GOP's.
That's turned up to 11, the phrase, you will not replace us.
Yes.
Like, yeah. That's essentially what he's saying. And we've seen former and future presidents defend people who say, you will not replace mm-hmm. us. So, like, X-Men's not bringing it. Like, they're swinging.
They definitely... Do you guys think the Friends of Humanity are essentially our big bad through all of this? Because these first two episodes were, again, for...
One
like,
story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With them. Like, the first one, the Friends of Humanity were getting all these weapons. They were Sentinel weapons and, like, arms and shit. And then in the second one...
Their arms were arms.
Their arms were arms. I could see them being the main plot in the 10 episodes we get.
Yeah.
And then, like, we had, like... Oh, try to convince Sunspot to join the team in episode one. Oh, deal with Magneto's trial in episode two. So, like, little things, but throughout the margins of all 10 episodes, it's going to be about this.
Yeah.
I do remember, though, hearing a long time ago, and then Mike reminded me when we were watching it in Pop Filter Theater, that there is another bald person in this season.
Oh, she is in the season?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that she was, like, you could... I read an article where, you could briefly see her in a trailer.
Interesting. Well, I know we can see her in the trailer of the Deadpool movie. So I'm hoping they're doing the old school synergy of like just like highlighting characters that are in one medium and another medium and not saying and it's all connected. I want this to stay its own thing.
I think they already said that, right?
Good.
That
yes,
this is
hopefully.
Yeah.
Cassandra Nova, which is Professor X's sort of twin sister, is who we're talking about.
Oh.
Listeners, not Cassie.
Yeah, not me. I knew this. I absolutely knew this.
Because there is, there in the second episode, there is a Buck Wild moment that reminded me the most of the old school one, because it felt like, did I blink for 10 minutes and miss a lot? Because suddenly Jean is tripping out and having weird mind shadow things, and then you see a weird other, she's like, he's something's here, and then goes on a weird psychedelic adventure, and then we just ignore that and cut to them fighting a sentinel to the point where I was like, is this still in it? Because everybody's doing boss shit. Is this still Jean thinking about it? Beast is like taking over Sentinel's body, controlling
it. Fucking rad.
And I was like, so she's making everybody look cooler than they actually are. But no, we just never get back to that.
Yeah.
A couple of other 97 and 24 things. Obviously, there's never going to be a cigar in Wolverine's mouth.
No.
And something I remember from the 90s cartoon, not now, was this Jubilee girl is half Asian, make her as white as possible.
Yes.
And now the directive is make her as Asian as possible.
Yeah, she looks how she is.
Right.
Yeah.
It used to be bad to have Asian characters, and now it's bad to not. Like, that is a big jump that we've taken over the last 30 years.
I miss Jubilee in our recap. They try to make her cool. When she goes to the club, she uses her sparkles to be a little rave kid.
And dances better than anybody's ever danced.
Yes.
Ever.
That's how I dance, by the way. That rave was so popping that I imagined you could see Macaulay Culkin and Seth Green from Party Monsters in the corner doing the drugs.
Doing the drugs.
Doing the drugs.
Doing the drugs. We're almost out of time. So
no!
Do we just make this all the whole show and never stop talking about this?
Yes.
Absolutely. I do want to get overall feelings. Have we all just accepted that we are changing our minds? It's not the Buck Wild show, but we're still loving this.
And I mean, talk about like a little antidote to the Buck Wildness. We still have Spider-Man every week.
Yeah.
So we'll get our... yah-yahs off on that, and then we'll watch this as a good movie or a good show. So yeah, I'm stoked, and I've got 19 moments of the week, Cassie.
Yeah,
so
it's hard not to have more.
Let's fucking go to it. Ryan, I'll let you do one or two right now. Might come back to you.
One is absolutely the moment of this week on any TV show, which is Cyclops watching all of the flyers fly people.
Yeah.
To safety after their plane explodes, but him just smirking, watching that happen and like not caring. as he uses his optic blast to do literally everything, but just most of all be a badass and land in the dirt in such a way where the dust comes up and then slowly dissipates to reveal the most badass person in fiction history.
Put some respect on his name. We watched it in the theater with your wife, Ryan, and she said he is Captain America coded, which is...
Which she meant as an insult.
But I ignored that and said, yep. And people, the old school comic readers, that he always has been the X-Men's Captain America. Mm-hmm. Just most adaptations have failed that. And I think this one's like, no, to make Mike and Ryan happy, we are going to make Scott Summers badass.
Also, how did his powers start? Remember when his powers first happened?
How?
Fell out of a plane. And when he hit the ground, his all of a sudden he could shoot red out of his eyes.
I'm going to go back. I have a ticket to buy.
Mike, what's your moment of the week?
Yeah, there's so many. I'm going to say the one I liked a lot is at the towards the end of the first episode, Magneto throwing the shade probably the most. He's like, yeah, I saved the Morlocks. I took him to the Mutant Nation of Genosha. It's a shame that Charles, with his billions of dollars, and you X-Men, for all you say, never thought to help the worst amongst us.
Which is pulling a little Killmonger there.
Oh, weird. Oh, yeah, he is. But he also, good fucking point. The X-Men went like, yeah, we know the sewer folk. What are we going to do? Invite them to live in our mansion with us? Ew.
I would never. My moment of the week is just the way that Magneto is drawn. Shoulders out, fucking
guns out.
God, he's so sassy.
Is he the animated version of Lionel Luther?
Yes. Yeah,
fucking shredded. Just that beautiful mane, absolutely shredded. Oh, also, him and Rogue have a weird thing going on.
What
we didn't
the
even
what?
Talk about. Is this from comics? What the fuck is this?
I think
this?
There was a time, but the one thing that it didn't forget, or it still tries to do because it can't animate itself poorly, like the old one, and it can't be as Buck Wild, is this is a fucking soap opera with action in between. And for us to see a little bit of a thing going on between Magneto and Rogue.
And there's like little hints, right? So there's one, and he like said something slightly creepy, and she's like, I can't let any of them know. But it was after she was like, yeah, man, I was bad, and now I'm on the team.
Yeah.
So half of us were. And he's like, plus, what? And she's like, ugh. Like, it was that vague. And then later, in the second episode, he's like, don't you miss human touch? And then like their hands actually touch. She takes her glove off and you're like, what? They're gonna rail. And then Gambit is just outside the door with a giant glass listening, his card unexploded in sadness.
All right, guys, we got to get Gambit in here. He sees Rogue walking from Magneto's room. He gets sad. What does he do? He should drop something. A card. Oh, yeah, he drops
it.
Right.
Shatters into 1,000 little cards.
They all run away.
My other moment of the week, when we were introduced to Gambit in his crop top, he was baking beignets for the whole team, because you know that motherfucker, in case you forgot what he's about.
How do you get cum gutters? Beignets.
All fried dough, I think. See that kind of ab.
Real quick, this is a good moment, but a bit of a disappointment. One of the things that I saw before I watched, but wasn't sure what it meant, was Gambit on Wolverine's back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cassie, you mentioned this because that's when Morph turns into Blob.
Yeah.
That fight was sick.
So good.
The whole Sentinel fight was amazing. But what I could have used is Wolverine, he's just running towards the camera.
Mm.
And what he could have said was, and then Gambit jumps on his back and he's like, no.
Or he goes, Gambit 2.
Why aren't they singing their own song?
I would always sing our theme song if we went into battle.
The show is still so good. You should absolutely be watching it. It's on Disney Plus. Ryan, I believe you had a website.
I do, Cassie. That's so nice of you to ask. It is called themesong.com, which, if you look at the word, it's also themesong.com.
Wow.
What is your theme song? And this website will use CGI, ChatGPT, and the FDA to come up what is the perfect theme song for you forever. Now, caveat. It is always the X-Men theme song. But I still think that is worth $49.95 a month to have the X-Men theme song play wherever you are as long as you're in front of your laptop.
I mean, honestly, you could only have that because if you give somebody, like, they type it in and they get something like Sesame Street or something, like, that fucking wrecks you.
They're going to ask for a refund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you get this, worth it, 100%.
I'm gonna fund this and also carry around my laptop on my shoulder as if it was some sort of Fight the Power and I was in an 80s Spike Lee movie. Everybody's gonna hear this shit.
And pick up Oscar the Grouch, mm-hmm. who is singing Sesame Street, and you throw that motherfucker's hand right through a
kick rocks, window. Trash boy.
So you have somebody sponsoring you, but I do think you need somebody to help you make this website. So I'm going to send you over to my friend, cybersprout.net. Their design experts, which they have plenty of. They're well-versed in digital strategy and elegant design. They work hand-in-hand with you. They focus on collaboration. They do...
Goal-driven design?
Goal-driven design, even. Cybersprout.net, your partner for a digital world. Coming up next, it's the Pull List. It's time for the Pull List, where we cover every other show that came out this week. First up is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. On the fourth episode of The Ones Who Live, Michonne is trying to convince Rick to go home with her, but he is set on trying to rebuild the CRM into something good. Michonne tries all of the techniques to convince him, including telling her they have a son together and that kid's name is Rick Jr., boning him down while surrounded by walkers, and finally giving Rick an iPhone with Carl's face engraved in it. Taste buds, I ask you, which one of these techniques would work for you?
Boning down.
Boning down, yeah. But surrounded by zombies for that extra spark of danger.
Yeah, just a little bit, but iPhone with Carl's face engraved?
Carved? But how good is the carver? Could it look like anybody?
I'm assuming she carved it in, and she spent years
and he's like,
perfecting
is that
this.
Chalamet?
Wait, boning down means eating ribs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the ribs. I'm going for the ribs. Barbecue.
You're looking at the zombies' ribs coming at you while you're eating your own ribs. Be like, God damn, I love ribs.
You guys ever eat ribs while watching Walking Dead?
It's fucking amazing.
Well, that's on Sundays on AMC. Our next show is Resident Alien.
This week on Resident Alien, Harry is making bagel bites and thinking about spending the rest of his life with Heather while she's thinking about how to break up with him. Turns out that's by messenger pigeon. Meanwhile, Darcy's sleeping outside of Mayor Ben's, and the sheriff is helping Liv deal with her Nana issues. Ryan, I ask you this. How afraid are you that we're actually going to lose Edie Bean Dip Patterson?
I think it's coming, and I hope that she does, because she is going to fly off to bigger and better things. But the time that we have was amazing. Just absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
I mean, on her first episode, I thought that she was just going to be a voice.
Right.
Because she was a giant ostrich, yes. Which Linda Hamilton tries to.
I was going to say, speaking of, Darcy somehow gets the general's number.
Uh-huh.
And who knows? She was an Olympian, so she has access to a lot of people. And the general's like, I know how to cheer him up. And just brings an emu or an ostrich. And she's like, look, I'm not here to judge, but do what you got to do with this girl. I do have to return her and then finish that bomb for me.
Rape this non-consenting giant bird.
That bird was asking for it.
Okay. That's the mic we know and
it's
love.
A different culture.
Big birding?
Big birding.
Another Sesame Street reference. Yeah, it'll be sad, but storylines have to come and go. I do think that this was one of those episodes where we are wrapping up a couple and starting a couple, and I think we only have two left in the season.
Really?
So I think that, we're about towards the race to the finish.
I guess that makes sense, because even though this feels like a more plot-heavy season, The show is still so fucking funny that I don't care that there's plot and movement of a story.
You're not doing your typical story on.
Oh, a story. No, like, because Harry's still wrapped in a blanket, sobbing, mm-hmm. and that's hilarious. While, again, like, and the most brutal, like, they're just sharpening all their tools. The stuff with Kate, Mayor wife Kate, and the, like, Alien Anonymous, and her stuff is just getting more and more brutal. I just didn't know the show could do that.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes when you're not sure what to do with the character, you just sort of write them off, or you give them the most devastating possible storyline you can think of.
Hey, actor, you said you had dramatic background and you're on our silly show. Well, girl, warm up those tear ducts.
And then she does. The actors have a like process for doing that.
She does. Yeah. And then they are deepening the sheriff and the deputy's relationship even more. And he is now like a supportive mentor.
He's not always, I don't care, but like holds her hand, walks her into the Nana's house.
when he breaks, I didn't know you could do this with a friend, stop making fun of them and just be like, you're one of the strongest people I know. Except when your goddamn Nana rolls around. Let's go to her house. I'm not going to say shit, but I will hear just to look at you when your Nana's a twat. And man, fuck that Nana.
Yeah. I mean, figuratively. And then did you see that coming? What happens to the Nana?
Oh, yeah. She had a heart attack. It made me laugh. In hindsight, it was like, oh, that all makes sense. But
Deputy Liv finally goes off on her, and most of it is bleeped because of all of the curse words she is screaming at her Nana, and then she falls over. But the sheriff does say she was already pre-heart attacking before we went in there, so it's probably not your fault.
Before the bleeps, Liv does say, you're cruel and vicious and smell like vinegar, which is...
Let's go ahead and go to moment of the week. Ryan, what do you got?
Pigeon that Mike was talking about in the intro is doing a lot of work. They just refuse to text or even mail. So there's a montage of this pigeon playing back and forth. And Edie Patterson or Heather, which rhymes with Feather, says, we can't keep doing the notes. It's not fair to Arlo. He's freaking exhausted.
That was the most Judy Gemstone. He's freaking exhausted.
Freaking exhausted.
But there's other pigeons. Like, why didn't they just...
Yeah, but they're not Arlo.
Yeah, they're not as smart as Arlo.
Fair enough. Mike, what's your moment of the week?
There's so many great lines in this one. Mayor Ben, I'm trying to shine a light on him that he is getting better.
Yeah.
When he confronts Darcy for sleeping outside their house, and he's like, and what's in that jar? It's pretty full and smells like pee-pee.
No, he does have a child, so maybe that's why he talks.
Yeah, but his child is 12. Yeah, like, his child is like...
Yeah, but it's Max.
This shit smells like piss, Dad. And then another one is the sheriff's talking about how to deal with a bad dog. And he says, they pee on you, you pee on them. Don't rub their nose on it. That'd be cruel. Just a lot of good piss talk in this episode.
I love the sheriff.
Oh, there's another great one. Darcy and Harry... are yelling at each other because he threw his pizza on the ground when they're trying to cheer him up. He says, I hate you. And she says, I hate you more. And he slams and runs the door, and she looks at Aston and says, I think I finally have what it takes to be a mother.
Resident Alien is Wednesdays on Sci-Fi. Our final show is Invincible.
This week's Invincible picks up right where last week's episode left us, as most of the Guardians are in space fighting Squidbirds as the B-team is getting fucked by the Serpent Society. When the dust settles, the A-team makes it home with Shapesmith in tow, while the score at home ends as this. Rex survives, Shrinking Ray survives, Duplicate is dead, much to the immortal chagrin. The rest of the episode finds our characters trying to come to terms with everything that has happened, including whether or not Mark and Amber can survive all of this. Taste buds, I ask you this. Did the second half of the episode hold up to the battles of the beginning of this one and the end of the last one?
Yeah, I think that's... what we don't get in a lot of other versions of superhero stuff is those character beats and the fallout. And I could see the argument for being like maybe action, character, action, character, but I kind of liked here's a wave of action that makes you go, yeah! And then just the long, weird, drawn-out character beats.
I still think, as much as I love this show, that there is a little bit of try-hardedness to Invincible sometimes. Mm. And those times happen when they pick the most emotional song to do a montage to. They might as well bring in Sarah McLachlan and her dying dogs. To...
I will remember you.
Or a scene like in this episode, we had Mark and the Taylor.
Uh-huh.
And
Amber and Eve.
Yeah, Eve. And you want to talk about character beats. Zazzy here.
Is that Zazzy Beats?
Yeah. They were doing a back and forth where like it was edited, so it was like one conversation, but two, and like that kind of stuff is really hard to do, and it's overdone.
Yes.
And then to watch it here, it was just like, I get where you guys are going, but this is one of your two try-hard moments.
It was, yeah, it was, if they pitched like, what if we did something like this, and never moved the like this part, and they just did that. You know that thing we've seen before? We're doing that.
Insert.
That's what Marvin Berry would say. Like, you know that scene you've seen before, Chuck? I got it for you. I would say, like, much like Resident Alien, this was an episode that needed to happen, but I don't think it could hold up. Invincible is capable of having the dramatic scenes that hold up to the action scenes.
Yeah.
And sometimes the action scenes are too try-hard, too, with the amount of uber-violence. But this particular back and forth of the Squidberts and the Serpent Society. Yeah. It's just too much to follow up on.
It's too brutal and hardcore. And I guess it's weird to split it in half because it just did keep going for both of those fights in this episode. I thought they were done, and I thought this was like a long previously on. And then I was like, oh no, we're still fighting and stuff? Cool. And at first I was like, oh, they bitched out because Shrink Ray and Rexplode both were like, nah, we're alive. But I guess Shrinking Ray, the show doesn't care about, nor do I. But for Rexplode, I am glad because now he's on this, like, I should be a good human tour.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's going to lead to good storylines. And then the Shrinking Ray was like, oh, now Duplicate's going to be alive. And then when she wasn't, yeah, it's like, okay, so you guys have a little bit of, you know.
And I guess it would be sadder if Duplicate died and Shrink Ray died and everybody still only cared about Duplicate because we know literally nothing else about Shrink Ray.
Her name is Rachel. And she could shrink, so she called herself Shrinking Ray.
She's like, I have my own life. I'm sorry you're not the closest people to me.
Another thing the show is doing, because, again, it's sort of a soap opera, not in just the way that X-Men is, but comic books are,
mm-hmm.
is that at the end we get, you know, we're learning more about Alan.
Yeah.
And Alan the Alien and his Viltrumite partner, this old guy. Mark's dad, Nolan, is still somewhere. Engstrom Levy comes back. There's all of the stuff building up.
Who got a nice new tailored suit with a four-armed tailor.
And is still voiced by Sterling K. Brown, so way to go there. And I'm wondering if we're building stuff forever.
Like, yes.
That's the thing that the Invincible comic was great at, much like the original Amazing Spider-Man comic was great at, is like we're always setting seeds forever.
Right.
Or if they're building to a big Infinity War conclusion where it all happens at once. And like as much as you want that, writers... It's so much more satisfying to just like never blow it all up at the same time.
What was so good, and there was a huge wave of, you know, like post-modern comics and 2000s comics that are commenting on, you say a word wrong enough, you have no idea what you're trying to say anymore, on like how comics formed. Invincible tried to make the Marvel Universe in one book on purpose.
Right.
And hit that gas. And it was so impressive how they ratcheted it up. And so it'll be interesting to see how much the show tries. Are we going to see Savage Dragon show up? Probably not. Remember that guy?
Cassie, that's your favorite guy, right?
It sounds it's going to be,
legit,
yeah.
You would love Savage Dragon.
I'm so excited, I hope.
A-Cab.
Is he a cop?
Yes.
Oh, what a bummer.
That's why he was so savage?
Yeah.
I know so little about that character, just his shape.
But yeah, usually when you're postmodern, you are meta, and yes. You are winking, and you're making jokes, and you're making fun of your source material. The amazing thing about the original comic, which I think the show is doing really well, is saying we have read those comics, and we love them, and we want to be like them.
Uh-huh. To the point where they're like, Rick is back. Y'all remember Rick? And I'm like,
yeah.
For sure.
Was he dating William? Were they just friends? And then I know the cyborg guy kind of took him over.
You pull your phone out and you're like, I need to order a trade paperback of the first season of Invincible so I can reread that real quick. But yeah, that's another plot line that's going on that I don't know if they're just doing this for pathos or if they're doing this for storyline's sake, but Donald Cecil's Coulson, we'll say.
Yes, he's definitely Coulson.
Found out that he is a LMD. We can just keep making it Marvel.
Make
mine Marvel always. And I don't know if this is going to be some sort of existential what does life mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or if this is just... Because Andrew Rannells...
William. Yes.
Gets his boyfriend back, who exploded.
And he's gonna be in trouble.
And William sort of realizes right away, like, what the fuck is life?
Yeah. Rick. Not William.
Oh, yeah, Rick.
Yeah, Rick, the guy who was back. He's like, who am I? Was I this guy? This is different. Are my memories real memories?
And
Donald's like,
I've
been fighting saying all that out loud, but now this kid is saying it. Fuck.
William's just like, can we just kiss or let's just hook up? What are we doing here? I don't know how far they're going to take that one, but
yeah.
You know, all in all, again, it's just a week of, moving the puzzle pieces episodes all in the shadow of X-Men 97. I don't know what to tell you.
Let's go ahead and go to moments of the week. Mike, what do you got?
Sometimes we have bad moments of the week, and it is that in this giant awesome fight, at no point did we ever hear...
Everything could be improved by that.
They're easy jokes, but I do love Seth Rogen's Alan the Alien, and he had two moments that made me chortle. It was as if I was that. it was, he keeps saying, this guy's being a douchebag about Immortus. Like, do you guys have that on Earth? Like, and he's, nobody's answering him. And then when Mark needs to talk to him, he puts a sock on the door. And Alan's like, oh, that's funny, because on my planet, that means somebody's fucking. And then Mark says, like, oh, that means that here, too. And Alan kind of gives him a quick side eye, like, I thought we were just trying to talk about the mission.
Ryan, your moment?
Thanks for remembering my name. It's hard to not give the sheriff every moment of the week in Resident Alien.
Yeah.
And for me, for a while, it's been hard to not give Russ or Shapesmith.
Shapesmith, yeah.
The moments of
Benny
the week.
Benny
Schwa. Voiced by Ben Schwartz, and this is not a Benny Schwartz moment. This is just animation. Everyone is trying to escape before the big wall closes, right? Like, the big door closes on top of them, because that's how cartoons work. And everyone runs out very superhero heroically, and then he's last, and he throws his arms up in the air and flails at, and screams as he runs, like much like I would do, guys.
Some sort of wacky tube man in front of...
Invincible is Thursdays on Amazon Prime. That is everything that came out this week. Next up, S Tasmania. Welcome to S Tasmania, bitch, a mini show within a show where we take an in-depth episode-by-episode look at Fox's seminal and underrated afternoon cartoon of the mid-90s, Spider-Man the Animated Series. This week, we're covering Neogenic Nightmare Chapter 4. Mike, how does this start off?
This starts off just as the last one ended. With
animated.
Animated. No, but now it's a flashback to... We get like a quick shot of Spider-Man's face, just so you know it's a flashback, to the very last frame of last week's episode of Kurt Connors being like, you're not human! And then we cut back to him, and he's in front of a pretty familiar mansion. And he doesn't say any names, but he goes, well, people say he's the greatest expert on genetic mutations.
Greatest ex what?
Expert.
X-Pert.
Yeah. And then he's like just in a big lawn. He goes, danger, but I don't see. And then a metal thing grabs him. Where are we, Ryan?
I think that we're in Westchester.
Westchester, New York.
Born and raised.
In the woods.
we're here. A perfectly fitting Spider-Man armor suit, yes, comes and grabs him and throws him into a metallic hall room.
Some sort of metallic hall room. And Wolverine walks up first and says, put out flypaper and catch a spider. And then the rest of the X-Men walk up behind him shaking their heads like why?
Son of a
that
bitch.
Would be spider paper. If, like, why would you say
what,
that?
What, yeah. What is this not a thing? Yeah. That's almost clever? Is there a term for near clever?
But like, Wolverine, if you're going to be, like, just don't be clever at all. If you're going to be that close to clever, like, that's the opposite.
Just saying, we caught you. Don't. Rogue flirts with him. Wolverine threatens him. And then he web blasts all the X-Men. And what tune kicks in?
Yes.
This is, I mean, we watched every episode of X-Men, including the first two of this new one, and I have never heard the song this loud for this long. Like, they are shouting over the theme to talk to each other as if, like, we're in a bar and there's a band you don't want to see.
But it's because underneath them shouting and the theme song blasting, you can hear the producer saying, ratings on Spider-Man are down. We have to do... What do you want? We have to pull in the X-Men.
That's J. Jonah Murdoch that you're listening to right there. Fox Kids. Not as popular as we thought.
Spider-Man keeps calling it the Pentagon. Mm. He keeps being like, how'd I get in the Pentagon?
Well, I think if you're not smart...
It clearly looks like a school.
Yeah,
like...
if it's an important building, you just say Pentagon.
All right, Pentagon.
Wait, did you just call me? Yeah. I'm an important building?
You look like an important building.
And then, he flips around, runs around, does some Spider-Man shit, and winds up in safety, yes?
Yeah, he's like, oh, good, I found the right door to outside. Who are those clowns? Buddy, you're not outside. It turns out Gambit left the deadly Sentinels program on, as
that's
he tells
my
Cyclops.
Boy.
And Rogue is like, wait, hold on. Not the Girl Scout cookie selling Sentinel program? No.
No.
Not the mattress fluffing Sentinel program? No. The deadly Sentinel.
Gambit is the kind of mutant that he can only, ejaculate if he is almost dying all the time. So that's why he took all the safety measures off.
We do have to talk about something very important, though, because we spent our youth and our recent adult youth watching a particular-eyed Gambit.
Yes.
And now, and that's black whites and pink eyes.
Yeah. Black, whites, pink eyes. That's the way the sun rise.
Now we have pink eyes, black. You know what? Let's just move on to the
just
next
flipped. Yeah, yeah, I have no idea what you're trying to say.
His eyes are colors are
they're switches. They're flipped to let you know this ain't your daddy's gambit.
Right. And even now that we've reached my point, I still
yeah. Why? Why did you make it? So Spider-Man's just like, oh, look at these tin men. And Storm, she power poses, even though it's the danger room. She Hell says, yeah. The power of lightning strikes again. But it was the first time. But okay, Storm.
And well, she was just ordering donuts with lightning like 10 minutes ago.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man says, the power of web shooters gets real sticky. Because that's our guy.
That's good.
And halfway through the fight, all the X-Men are in there. Cyclops is like, hey, Jean, can you just go turn this shit off?
Or unplug it, or like elbow it.
Why did any of them run in? Why didn't they all just run to the control room?
Like, you and I have talked about the danger room for basically since the day we met.
Yes.
It's benefits, it's advantages, yes. Disadvantages. There's this other thing that we know, that all technology will eventually is created and will eventually be used for fucking.
Yes.
I want to know what kind of fuck room that thing is turned into.
Well, that's what... that's the comic run where danger becomes sentient. That's why it's too much jism soaked into the wires and coolants and reactors and things, and she became alive. But no, that's what Gambit was doing. That's what I was saying. He was fucking to death all of the Sentinels, and that's why he was like, we shouldn't let him in there.
So he's the deadly. They're the Sentinels.
Yes, because everything explodes coming out of him.
Gross.
Charles breaks in to all these shenanigans, and very like, I guess because in his head, Spider-Man was breaking in even though he was pulled into the mansion, and he goes, what do you want here? Very angrily.
And by the way, when he walks in, he's like, just so you know, I'm not Morph. And I'm like, oh, okay.
So is he still dead? He's dead right now? He's dead right now. And if he wasn't dead, he'd have two black eyes? That's the Morph we're dealing with?
Did you look up what X-Men episode this came out next
No,
to?
Did you?
No. But I did read that this script was already written.
Uh-huh.
And then they had to add some things to make it part of Neogenic Nightmare. But that was not because the X-Men. It was like...
They added like the flashback to Connors. Is that what?
They added Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
For like a minute. And then, Spider-Man's anger at being a mutant was...
Whoa, yeah.
Let's get to that.
This is not... I know he's like... The douchiest Spider-Man we've ever dealt with.
This is a bridge too far, I believe.
But this is... He's like, I don't want to be some sort of freak. Beast is standing right there, my friend.
I mean, they all are.
They all are. Yeah. Oh, wait, is this on me? Am I showing my... We're only calling out Beast. I mean, a weird-eyed Gambit that we all noticed is standing right there, my friend.
I mean, in the X-Men 97 episodes that we watched, it had... Roberto da Costa being a mutant, knowing mutants, and still seeing Beast and being like,
you big gorilla.
But yeah, Spider-Man is a fucking bigot.
Spider-Man says, can you cure me? And Charles Xavier gives it, he's like, I mean, I don't think it is a cure kind of thing. One, I don't know what the fuck your shit is, but also mutant isn't a thing to be cured. It's who we are. And he's like, I don't want to be a freak. And this is the one time I've ever seen Wolverine be right for right. How mad he gets. He's like, I'm going to gut this. Yeah, he's a bigot. Kill the Spider-Man.
But we also get a little bit of a thing, too. I think in this episode, and again, it's hard because of the amount of animated mutants we watched, but he's like, I want to be cured. And everybody's like, you're disgusting. How could you ever say that? And then it cuts to Rogue going like,
She's like, well, I kind of want to fuck Spider-Man, so I want to be cured. I can't tell if that's her way of getting in his head or if she's just like a new dude who doesn't smell like trash. Thank God. Yeah,
finally.
And then for Spider-Man to point at Rogue and say, like, what is her mutant power? Having a fucking fat ass. Like, that's so weird.
I'm as nervous as a fat ass Rogue in a room full of rocking chairs.
How big is her rocking chair in every analogy?
Mm-hmm. Beast says he reminds Wolverine of a young Logan. Mm-hmm. And Wolverine goes, he ain't even a real mutant. Which is, so now we're getting into the colorism of mutants.
What do you have to do to be exactly what you mm-hmm. say you are? Is it identifying or is it born like? Also, did you notice, not to get racist, but Beast is getting beastier?
Like beefier?
Like he's or got
toothier.
Like, bigger fangs, and like crazier hair. Like his mutant power is going a little bit wild.
And I do think that they're playing into
wild.
Never see that in the old X-Men.
Right.
But this is playing with the stuff the comic played with.
Right.
He's like, okay, if he's not a real mutant, maybe he deserves a cure. And Wolverine's like, that's not like the Beast I know. And he's like, maybe you don't fucking know me then, man. And he storms off, and Wolverine's
shoves Wolverine against a locker.
What? You know I'm not good with nuance. What are you saying, bro?
It is an interesting point because I hate, we've talked about this a million times on a million episodes, but I hate the idea of powers being taken away.
Yes.
X-Men 97, we didn't talk about how Storm got shot with a gun.
Yeah, that took power gunner.
Oh, yeah.
Depowered gun. You know what I'm trying to say.
Mutants are called mutants because they were born with whatever abilities.
Like
they
Lady had. Gaga. They were born this way.
Like the mutant Lady Gaga. But so Spider-Man isn't that. His DNA is changing.
Right.
Is that the same as being an X-Man? And I'm not sure that it is.
My issue has, and I'm sure we've talked about it, literally everybody's, but like, how does the layperson, how does the normal normie on the street know the difference between a mutant, a Fantastic Four, an Avenger, a Spider-Man?
See, this is why I love you, Mike, because you're not concerned with the plight of these marginalized people. You're just concerned about what does the white man say to them.
I don't get why not be afraid of all of them.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
In this reality.
Let the beat drop.
We cut to Hobgoblin to let us know that we are still watching Spider-Man.
Hobgoblin.
You hear that laugh. You see that silhouette. You're like, is this Batman the Animated Series? No, this is Hobgoblin.
Is this a fucking knockoff Joker voice? Oh, and by the way, I did read that this is not the original Hobgoblin from season one. This is Hobgoblin 2.
Different character?
A different character who took up the Hobgoblin mantle, voiced by Mark Hamill, who voiced Hobgoblin 1.
How are we supposed to know it's a different guy? He acts exactly the same.
Read IMDb trivia. That
I
is
guess
how
I should
that.
Read more yeah. IMDb trivia.
Yeah.
He says, I want to be alone with all my favorite presents because some random businessman gave him something and then it blows up, which is, you don't want to try to, you come at the king, you best not miss. He is going to come after you.
That person who brought the briefcase in with all the bombs.
Landon.
That is Landon. Did you recognize his voice?
His voice, it was like, I know it's not Kenneth Branagh, uh-huh. but it was really somebody doing like that kind of.
It's so close.
Posh, fucking. This is the kind of Brit, and like I know not all Brits suck, but this is the kind of Brit. Wait, you make someone want to punch in their imperial teeth.
Knock them
and
straighten
them.
We invented braces here in America. Braces are what I call my knuckles.
If our fans have listened to that, listen to Movie of the Year. I've listened to a particular episode called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. They heard me and Cassie and other people talk about a movie that starred this gentleman as the professor, the inventor of the ooze.
What?
Wow.
Yes. David Warner is his name, and he was the...
I recognize that face.
Landon's yeah. voice.
Of course he was.
I'm sure he has other credits, but
that's
why
the
does
best
it matter
one.
When you were in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2,
from
Finland, The Secret of the
Secret
ooze.
Of the Ooze to S-Taz. Kingpin is spying on this Landon, and we learn he's trying to get an army of super mutants. And then Smythe is there, and he's like, I don't trust him. And Kingpin's like, Smythe, you don't trust anybody. And Smythe is like, and I'm usually right. They've gone from being like antagonists and kind of hating each other. And work. They are a married couple. They've been married for 20 years oh, now.
We talked about, I don't know if you were here, Mike, when they were in the helicopter together, just sniping and bitching. And
yeah.
Like, they're such a couple.
I really like this evolution of their relationship. Right after Kingpin turns his spy camera off, Landon's like, but my real work is for the good of mankind. In a way, your tone says, oh, you hate mutants. You're going right. to do some anti-mutant shit. Because I know this tone. I watched all of X-Men.
You're just saying, because we've watched a lot of X-Men, so we know what's up in the world. My work is for the good of white men, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. All right, Landon.
Do you guys think, and serious question though, like for reals, do you guys think that Hobgoblin hates Landon because he loves flying?
Yes.
I also agree.
Points.
Beast tracks Spider-Man down, and before Beast can get one 10-syllable word out, Spider-Man says, I've heard all I want to hear from you X people. Excuse me. And then
Beast wanted to say was anti-disestablishmentarianism. And Spider-Man won't let him.
And Beast is like, okay, dick balls. New insult that Beast said, not me right now.
Ah, phallus scrotum. I have heard.
He's like, I used to work with this British bro I know his voice sounds posh, but he's actually a cool dude, and he's probably going to be able to help you, jackass.
That's Landon.
Yeah, and it's Landon.
Not we, flying, but Landon.
It's yeah, he's not flying.
Flying is Landon.
Random goons are watching Xavier's house, and then they start arguing.
Whoa, 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 buddy. Random goons?
Random goons.
No.
Who?
They say, the first person says, hey, I see one, to the second person. Mm. What is his name? This is not from IMDb trivia. This is from me watching closely.
What?
Leibold. I see one.
Like Lee like, Harvey Oswald? No.
Like the Leibold.
Oh, the Leibold.
The Leibold.
Yeah.
He says, I was trying to think of an assassin. I see one. And that is the co-creators of X-Men, the Animated Series, who we have interviewed on the show.
Go catch that in Superhero Show Show. Number. Producer, put the number here.
Fart.
The Leibolds, we learn who are anti-mutants, are watching them. And then they start having an argument about whether or not Spider-Man is a mutant and what they should take him down.
This is why it's hard
not
to be a bad guy, man. Like,
just like, but is he? I don't know. Ugh.
I hate so specifically. Like, what do I do?
I don't want to get this wrong.
And the other guy's like, what if we didn't hate anybody? No.
No, shut up.
You know, we got to hate the specific things we hate.
And then Spider-Man's like, here's the thing. I think you are human. I'm worried I'm not.
Again, insulting. There are, because Beast does say, like, we're human too.
Yeah.
And is that true, though? Is that
canon? Well, that's different. I mean, there's different schools of thought.
Okay, here we go.
But Spider-Man, I think, is trying to be like, I was kind of racist earlier. And he's like, no, I think you are. Wink. He's like, I'm worried I'm not. Like, I think I'm worse than you guys. Right. Sorry, that came out wrong. I'm saying you guys are bad. And like, he does this like foot in his mouth kind of shit.
Which is a big foot. That's hard to do.
It's a big old foot. And then the goons start attacking. After Spider-Man leaves, they take down Beast. And then we get this weird montage of all the people Spider-Man likes to spy on. He's peering in the window of Mary Jane. He's watching his Aunt May sleep. You know how when you're a young adult, you got to check on your elders and just paranormal activity and just stand over their bed while they're sleeping for a while. We've all been there.
Totally normal. That's what The Dark Knight was about.
Yes. And then he says goodbye to the picture of Uncle Ben. He gives it a big old smooch. And then we get a flashback to Uncle Ben teaching him how to fish.
Yeah, and not being mean, but like, not great. He was just like, hey, little bitch. Put your fucking fishing pole back in that lake.
Well, I like because he's so lionized and how
I didn't
May
learn
and
how
Peter
to make rice for everyone, so you could just not fish.
That this is the real Ben. Like, he had flaws. He was not just a white knight hero. And he does. He's like, Peter, the key to everything in life is opportunity, preparation, and confidence. And what you lack, you little bitch, is confidence. And kicks him in the knee.
But, like, front ways. So, like,
the bad way.
Yeah, and then you can see the kneecap fall down to the jeans. Yeah, through the jeans. And then it gets out and runs away.
I'm free. Spider-Man remembers that he has to keep fighting because Earl get kicked in the knee.
Uh-huh.
And then Wolverine, taking a page out of Spider-Man's book, goes, nobody slept in Beast's bed last night. And then the rest of the X-Men are like, God
Wolverine,
damn it, Logan.
Stop fucking smelling beds.
We got to stop sniffing couches. Now please stop sniffing beds.
Somebody shit in Beast chamber pot. It wasn't the Beast.
But it was just right.
I think it was Goldilocks.
He shows up to the woods and he goes, I smell Beast and Spider-Man and a bunch of guys I'd never smelled before.
I bet they're Leibolds.
And then of course, he thinks Spider-Man set Beast up. Because he does not trust. It's weird that these two groups of people that we know so well don't know each other.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, like, it takes a while to be a superhero, and then, like, you have to meet Captain America.
Yeah.
And then you have to, like, get on the Avengers radar. And then
you have,
like,
to fight the Punisher and go, right. I don't know if this guy is a hero.
What if I just, like, don't like what he does, but turn to cheek?
We cut to Peter Parker is there to watch Landon do his big TED Talk, and then some assistant of Landon, some coworker. I don't want to say assistant just because she's a woman, but she does carry around his clipboard for him. She turns to Peter, and I think they, like, just met. She's like, but you don't think they let any of those muties in here, do you? And just like, what?
No, honestly, since 2016, this has been my life.
Yes.
Like, because of the way that I look,
right,
which is like a fucking racist.
Stop hillbilly. Wearing wraparound sunglasses.
people will just come up to me and be like, just say the craziest things, like the Trumpiest MAGA things. And they will just assume, like, you get it, right? And so, yeah, this lady's like, those fucking stinky-ass people aren't here, are they?
And then he's like, Caroline, I can't believe you. Caroline, his pushback is so milquetoast. It is like, but I put way too much emotion in it. He's just like, I can't believe you.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. It's so not pushback.
But we do get, like, Caroline is ultimately a foil to Spider-Man, because then Spider-Man can look at himself in a mirror and be like,
yes.
Am I acting like Caroline?
What he says is, I'm surprised at you. And then
the ultimate takedown.
That gets under her skin, because she's like, fine, you mutie lover. It's like, wow, Caroline, you fucking escalated this shit.
No, if you ever say to somebody that has those beliefs,
yeah,
I don't really know, they will fucking scream at you. They will take you down.
We're in the middle of this lecture and a big 3D dino DNA thing projecting.
DNA.
Those three letters are fucking ruined. Every time they said mutant DNA, I was like, mutant DNA.
Oh, hello, John. Can you?
That movie is 30 years old.
Hobgoblin 2 interrupts the lecture. And he sees Spider-Man there and he goes, I didn't come here for you, but I'll gladly take a 2-for-1.
He's wimpy.
And then later he quickly somebody flicks him in the nose. He goes, I'm leaving. I don't want my 2-for. And it's like, you're trying to make like a thing happen that nobody understands. A bit by one person.
Also, she's like, what if that getup wasn't as scary as you thought it was going to be? And people are just like, fuck you, dude. And
fuck you, rubber mask nose.
I'm going to give you a wedgie right now, Hobgoblin.
And then he flies after Landon and goes, I intend to quintuple your fee. Can you guys tell if they bring Spider-Man back, I'm gunning for this role. I've been working on the voice. I think it's not
really
terrible.
Good.
And then he flies out laughing and breaks the ceiling. He just blows up the ceiling. But like, he did not accomplish his goals.
No, he did not. Well, it's Hobgoblin 2. The sequels are never as good. But he does not make a perfect Hobgoblin-shaped hole in the roof as he flies away. He decimates the whole thing, and it all starts to tumble.
And Caroline, whose real name is Cecily, I think, but the same name, she's like, hey, Landon, we got to help Spider-Man. He risked our lives. And Landon's like, nope, I'm out, peace. And then Spider-Man is like, oh, I thought everyone was going to die because I froze. But something stopped the ceiling from caving in.
All of a sudden, it just froze there, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
And we don't get an answer to that.
It was probably either Superman or Batman.
We cut back to the Brand Corporation, which is where Landon works. And Beast is getting shocked. Not like surprised. He is getting electro-shocked.
I was surprised on Mike that he was not in a tube full of liquid.
No, that's Logan's thing.
Where we keep people is tubes of liquid.
Yeah, but he's not a person. That's where people go. Tubes of liquid. He's a beast.
You're speaking as the cartoon character and not your actual belief.
He's surrounded by electricity prisons. And he goes, Herbert, this is genocide. And that's when we learn Landon's name is Herbert.
The big reveal.
Do you guys think that Hobgoblin was always flying because he hates Herbert?
Yep. That's better.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I workshopped it. Also, at this point, and I know we don't like to do this. We don't like to talk shit on the animation or whatever, but Beast just becomes voiced by the Wolverine voice actor. And
we lost our guy. Can you just do Beast?
Or maybe the script said Wolverine, but he turns around and he's like, what are you doing?
Well, it's just how in the pilot, Pride of X-Men, Wolverine is
Australian
because somebody read one line wrong in a comic once.
Yeah.
So things can happen.
Who would cast an Australian as Wolverine?
That's absurd and I hate it.
Yeah. It'll never work.
It should be a good Scott. A degree Scott. We learned that the goo will make mutant cells turn against their bodies. It won't take their powers away. It'll act like a white blood cell and kill the mutant.
Okay.
And Landon's like, and I'm a hero. And then he like, this is how you know he knows he's a bastard, is he's like, and Hank, I couldn't have done it without your research from 20 years ago when we were best friends, my friend.
Always classic.
Hobgoblin shows up again. Spider-Man shows up. He clotheslines Hobgoblin, whips one of his own pumpkins at him, and Wolverine interrupts and attacks Spider-Man, and Hobgoblin throws his bombs. To be continued.
Oof. Chapter 4 Oof. Of the 48-part series,
and
Neogenic
Manor. I understand why this is Chapter 4. They're really telling one concise story here. This is very different than the first season of Spider-Man, where it was a bunch of disparate adventures.
Spider-Man colon the disparate adventures sounds pretty good right now. No, I'm just kidding. I'm loving this. I'm loving Neogenic Nightmare.
It's always good. All right, since that's the end of the episode, let's go to our webbies. Let's start it off with best web zinger. Ryan, what do you got?
Oh, we already talked about so many, but it's the tone, and I can't do the tone, okay? But when Spider-Man is getting away from the X-Men and has to say something shitty, he does really say when he says, excuse me, you could feel the X-skews.
That is the only correct answer for this episode.
Well, Ryan says it's the only correct one, and you went first. You're going to get the point, but I'm only giving you one.
Harsh.
Our next
looking harsh tie
award is going to be Kung Fu Grip or Best Move or Power. Mike, what do you got for it?
It is towards the end. Like we burned through it, but when they're at the Brand Corporation, Beast is being tortured. Spider-Man, he sees Hobgoblin coming, and he just sets up his web and clotheslines him to fall off his glider, and we've never seen him do that before, and it was boss. It's just a smart move.
It's just always what he should have done.
Yes.
Like, that's just the...
Clothesline everybody.
Do you guys ever play the PS4 or PS5 game?
No.
It's amazing, but there are so many things that he's never done before, like create a body out of webs, and then it runs around and starts punching people. Like,
that's fucking rad.
Explain that. That is...
No limit.
What are that thing's thoughts and feelings?
Let's have that in for an interview. Just be like, what did you think about X-Men
97? What am I, father?
No, buddy. I'm talking about X-Men 97 right now, okay?
No. Save that for later.
Kill me.
WTF. We want to talk about X-Men 97.
Ryan, what do you got for best move or power?
My best move or power, although it doesn't fully land, it doesn't do the job, but the roof or the ceiling is caving in, and he goes like thwip, 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 and then the webs bring the roof back together and like reconnect all of the broken parts.
Yeah.
And that's just some awesome webbing.
That's powerful stuff. I am going to give that one to Mike, though. Mike, I'm going to give you 2 points. Bam, bam, bam. Next one, most 90s thing. Ryan, what do you got?
The X-Men were in it. I hate the awards because it puts so much pressure on watching the show.
Yes.
Mm. And so I'm like, can I get these filled out as fast as possible? And then the X-Men showed up and was like,
absolutely.
I'm the Leo meme.
That's the 90s right there.
Mike, is that the only answer for this one?
I agree, but I will specifically say blasting that theme song to 11.
Hell yeah.
Throughout their fight so you cannot hear the dialogue.
You guys are basically on the same page. Ryan, I'm going to give you 2 points. I'm going to give Mike 1 point.
Fair.
Who knows why?
Absolutely unfair.
Who knows why? Our next one is New York is a character. Mike, what do you got?
Rough one.
This was the roughest. I will say everybody and their GD mother just dying to go to a science lecture.
We have two very different ideas of New York.
Well, explain it.
There's a real upstairs downstairs to New York.
That's true.
And the Never the Twain Shall Meet. And some people are just like, oh, yes, I have nothing to do on a Friday night. Shall we go see a science, talk about science things?
Science.
And everybody's there to be a little racist.
Jubilee's there doing her rave dance. Uh-huh.
It's the 90s.
Guys, make sure, no matter where you are, to always mention what decade it is.
It's helpful
for the future.
Ryan, what do you got for this?
It was a rough one because it all took place indoors or Westchester, but right at the very end, it felt like there was about to be a battle, and then they all rushed into an alleyway. And then like they had to do it all, not in a hallway, which is typical MCU, but yeah. An alleyway where like there's dumpsters and stinky.
You can smell
cats.
This cartoon. Yeah.
Stinky here.
So much stinky around.
Mike, I'm going to say maybe because I didn't live in New York. I don't know if I can agree with yours. So I am going to give that one to Ryan.
That makes no, then you should believe me.
I will never believe you, not once in my life.
Because I often served hors d'oeuvres at those events. I never went. I was not allowed to legally go. I was one of the muties they didn't want there.
He just says, ooh. All right. But,
what a cool mutant power, though. Hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvre man.
I'm going to give Ryan 2 points for that. Our final award, it all comes down to the Cassie compliment. Who has the best compliment for me? Starting with Mike.
To quote the late, great Uncle Ben. Uh-huh. Cassie, you got opportunity. You got preparation. What you lack is confidence.
So this is a compliment.
Cool compliment.
I don't know if I understand this award. I was legit gone the week this became a thing, and I've never quite wrapped my mind or my tongue around it.
Cassie, you have opportunity, you have confidence. Unfortunately, the third thing, you're a cunt.
Uncle Ben!
Whoa! See, my problem is, like, it's kind of right there. The word compliment's in it, and you do know what that is, right?
But I'm supposed to take something from the show.
No, yeah. I did it.
Yeah, let's see how Ryan did it, and maybe you can get it.
Yeah, show me.
There was an exact replication of the podcast on the show where a goddess comes down and says, power of lightning, strike again. And then one, or in this case, two little douchebags go like, I'm sticky. Power of webs, I'm so sticky. And Cassie is constantly, as a goddess, Omega level mutant, having to deal with two sticky fucking chuds.
You see, Ryan called me a goddess, and you said I lack confidence. So I am going to give that one to Ryan.
The devil and devil on your shoulder.
I'll give Ryan a point for that. That's going to take the total to Mike. I'm so sorry. You only got 3. And Ryan,
protest.
You got 6. 2, 4, 6. Yeah,
Cassie,
you got 6
this is
points.
Genocide.
Whoa.
To quote the show.
I thought the G word that we would throw around is gaslighting, but we have kicked it off a level.
Yeah.
This is just genocide.
Dabbling in genocide, I see.
I declare genocide.
And that's just the best note to end this show on. So that is it for the show. You can subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch every episode on YouTube at Your Pop Filter. We also got some websites. Mike, tell the people about them websites.
I think it was themesong.com.
Yep, it's a good one.
If you want to get your unique, customized, personalized theme song. And popfilter.co is where you can go to get everything we... I wish I had another
flow.
Rhyme here.
That's what we play.
I lack the flow. It's where we put all our shit. So throw a little / Amazon there. But like
fully
cool shit,
up.
Not like it's bad. Like it's where we put all like the shit. Popfilter.co/Amazon. Bookmark that. Shop that way. Christmas in July is coming up and you're going to want to be shopping. And why don't you help out your old pals at Your Pop Filter? That's popfilter.co/Amazon.
The voice you decided to throw at the end there was terrible. Ryan, please tell the other people about another show.
Oh, man. Right now, we have finally... Wait. Is it true, Mike?
It's true.
No.
Have we done it?
2023.
No. This week.
No.
Okay, so
okay.
Coming soon. In four days.
A few days ago, we ended 2023.
In 4 days, we are starting...
4 days.
1984.
Do you know what that is?
Not 2023?
Is this math right? 40 years ago.
40 years
ago
today. It's
the 40th anniversary of all the movies we'll be talking about.
We are, start now. If you haven't listened yet, please start now because we're doing the big bracket where we cut the 64 down to 16. Those are the 16 movies that will get their own show. And I got to tell you, Mike, amazing guess.
Oh, we're doing guests this year.
Yes.
Woo.
And look, we've loved our past guests. Some are named Cassie and are in this room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but these new guests
know about, have seen movies.
Have seen movies.
Well,
and listeners, you've seen them and heard them in things.
Oh my gosh.
Should we reveal somebody?
Are we allowed to?
Peter Travers.
Oh my goodness.
From the magazine Rolling Stone has said, I will not appear on that podcast, but 4 stars because he gives a fucking everything 4 stars.
Can I also give hints? I have recently read one book by a coming guest, and have read a book where one of our guests is in the book.
All right, spill. Give us both the names.
Do you want the real names? Am I allowed to? Matt Singer.
Oh my God, Mike.
author of Opposable Thumbs. One, read it. If you're like me and you're like, how did I get here? Looking in the mirror. It's because Ebert and Siskel.
Ebert and Siskel. Nobody's ever said that before.
Nobody's ever said that. Siskel and Ebert. And you'll learn how many drag down knockout fights they had about the order of their names.
Who did he mention in there?
These two delightful bastards. No. That's one book.
Oh, okay.
Another book I just read about is Melinda Julie Cooper Clark.
Also on the show.
Also will be on the show.
It's going to be a banger of a season, and now is the time to search it up and subscribe. Because,
search it up!
that is how you get to know what are the 16 movies that will be in this bracket. Mike and I have already recorded an episode or two.
Yeah.
And, guys, 84, man.
It's an every year, as we say, every year is a good year for movies. It is fucking nuts what 84 is for
Cassie,
movies.
You were 25 in 84. What did you think?
I thought it was amazing.
It's a good year, right?
It's a great year.
Yeah.
We're also on social media at Your Pop Filter on Instagram. We got an email, contact@popfilter.co. If you have any opinions on the new X-Men 97, go ahead and email those over to us. That's it for this week. Next week, we're going to check back in on Invincible for the main event. And for Mike, I'm Ryan. For Ryan, I'm Mike. For me, I am me. Bye, everyone.